Hey everybody, it's Adam, live and in person for you. Hey everybody, it's Adam, wonder who he'll interview.
Hey everyone, it's Call Me Adam, and on today's episode of Bearing It All with Call Me Adam, we are talking with Emmy and Golden Globe nominated actress, singer, and author, Gloria Rubin. Hi, Gloria.
Hi, Adam.
How are you?
I'm great, thanks. How are you?
Good. It's so great to be talking to you again. Let's get started, because we have so much to talk about.
Yes, we do.
First of all, in September 2018, we did an interview together to promote your previous Feinstein's 54 Below show, The Men I Love. So it's been a little over a year since that interview. What has been the biggest change to happen to you in this past year?
Well, I would say the biggest change has been the publication of my first book. That definitely has been the biggest creative and professional accomplishment within 1 year. It was a few years in the making, of course, but for it to come to fruition, it's really, really exciting.
Well, I have to say it's very good. I'm about halfway to three quarters of the way through, and I love it so far. So congratulations on it.
Thank you very much. I'm so glad that you're reading it. Thank you.
Oh yeah, it's very moving, and there's so much there, so which we're going to get to a little bit later. But first, let's talk about your upcoming Feinstein's 54 Below show called From Ballads to Bossa, which is featuring songs from your upcoming album, For All We Know. So what can you tell us about this upcoming show and album?
Well, For All We Know is, as you mentioned, an upcoming album. It will be released early next year, early 2020. And that is another amazing accomplishment that happened within the last 12 months. So I finished the album. It's my second on the MCG Jazz record label. And it's just vocals and guitar on this record. Marty Ashby is the guitarist, and he's the executive director of MCG Jazz. And he and I did Perchance to Dream, my previous album, together as well. He produced that record as well. And the last tune on that album, on Perchance to Dream, which is Here's to Life, you know, iconic Shirley Horn, yeah, tune, is just guitar and vocals. I like to do that song piano and vocals when I perform. But you know, when we were recording that song, it just kind of re-sparked in me this dream, if you will, of doing a record of just vocals and guitar in all variations, you know, again, from ballads to bossa nova, mm-hmm, to everything in between, great American songbook classics that are done in very fresh arrangements. So I'm excited about that.
Just, you touched upon how your last show and album was more piano and vocals. And now this show, like you mentioned, is going to be vocals and guitar. And you're going to be accompanied by Pete Smith, mm-hmm, on guitar. So what made you want to stylize this show with guitar as opposed to piano, which you kind of touched upon, but let's go into a little more depth with it.
Yes, of course. Well, I will do a couple of tunes just me at the piano, which would be great. But in order to reflect the record, For All We Know, again, which is just guitar and vocals, I thought, let me do this performance with just guitar and vocals so that, you know, that those in attendance will get a chance to hear not just a number of tunes from the record, but also a few tunes from Perchance to Dream, mm-hmm, and a couple of other songs, a tribute to Nat King Cole, with just, as an example, with just guitar and vocals to, you know, again, offer this a new, fresh experience with well-known songs. There's something really, I love the simplicity and the intimacy, mm-hmm, with one instrument and vocals. It's really scary in a way, because there's nowhere to hide. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's no, you know, drum solo or the bass or any of that. But, you know, clearly I like to be scared,
yeah,
and find my, and walk my way through it. But, yeah, I'm really excited about it. It was something to do with to have my show. I can't believe it was a year ago already. Wow. How did that happen so fast? But The Men I Love, which was just me at the piano, and was a song in tribute to my favorite male singer-songwriters. That was a big leap as well. Mm. So I look forward to combining both, you know, piano and vocals and guitar and vocals, and kind of merge both together.
It's going to be such a great show. I know everybody listening who's going to the show is going to be so lucky to see you. Mm-hmm. One song that you will be performing in the show is Where Do You Start, which is written by Alan and Marilyn Bergman and John Mandel. My favorite line in that song is, how do you deal with all things you thought would last that didn't? So what's your secret to getting through rough times, which we're going to get to in a little bit, sort of foreshadowing a little bit later in the interview, but how do you get through rough times?
With all the things you thought would last that didn't last. Well, Italian red wine helps a lot. I'm not an advocate for, you know, drinking too much of it, but trust me, some days it's like, yeah, I think I'll have
a glass here and there.
Exactly. I don't know. For me, it's if I just allow myself the time and the space to let the process unfold as it will, then I'll be okay. If I think that I should be, that word should is a killer in my life. If I should be over it, or if it should be, you know, if I should be feeling better, then I'm in trouble. But I have to recognize and respect the process. It's been, we all experience loss and grief. In many regards, it's been decades worth for me. Mm-hmm. So I have, you know, music for sure is a godsend for me. Yeah. Music, singing and piano, and the piano, no question about it, was since I was a little girl. Writing has always been very healing for me as well. Even, you know, the book started out as journal writing, just getting out of my head, mm-hmm. getting it down on paper, literally pen to paper, not keyboard, not computer, like none of that. Mm-hmm. You know, it's got to be pen to paper. It's got to be the tangible. That helps a great deal. So writing, music, red wine.
That's wonderful. That was a great combination.
And talking, you know, talking, saying it out loud is helpful as well. So.
Yeah. Well, we're going to get more into that actually right now, because this does lead into the next part of our interview about your book, My Brother's Keeper, which releases November 19th. And the book honors your two brothers who have passed away. So when did you first decide you wanted to write a book about their passing? And I know briefly you mentioned it took about it was a few years in writing, but how long really was it from idea to inception?
Well, the idea grew organically from the journal writing. Journal writing kind of started being shaped into almost essay writing. My brother David passed many years ago, just before his 22nd birthday, and my oldest brother Dennis died 9 years ago. Both deaths were very sudden, and unexpected. So I... you know, again, the writing really helped a lot. My brother's keeper, I've always loved that, you know, that saying, that term, that feeling that those words convey. And for my book, the apostrophe is at the end of the S, mm-hmm. so that I hold those two, my two brothers dear, and always will, of course. As the essays kind of started to grow, and I had the instinct, the intuition, the impulse to shape them into a book, and to the publication of it now this year was at least a good 5 years. And it will be available in print on November 19th. And it's available for pre-order now online, which is great. And it's really kind of amazing that this has happened. I mean, it's really amazing. And it's really beautiful. I do say so myself.
Well, I can attest to that as I've started reading the book myself. It's very well written. You're very descriptive in how you describe your brothers, your relationship. There's a lot of stuff in the book that's very heavy, and a lot of things that I kept, you know, as I'm reading, I'm like, oh wow, oh, I want to find out more about that. And I don't want to give away too much of the book, because everybody, you need to read this book. It's so good. But it's amazing how you get through everything. Not only their passings, but I mean, your father passed away when you were young, and the issues that you talk about that seem to have come up from their passings, it's incredible. And that you're here today and you're able to write about it and talk about it is just, it's so incredible, and it's going to help so many people.
Thank you for saying that. I really hope so. That's really the dream, is, you know, to help with the healing process for everyone. And I know what you mean about more, you know, wanting to know more, because the more that I wrote and the more that I continue to write, already the second book is coming, believe me.
Oh,
yeah.
That's so great.
Yeah, I think I might have to take a few months off and go to Italy so that I can really stay focused and that the red wine is plentiful. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
I don't want people to get the wrong idea about, you know, I'm really just trying to make a joke, but
yeah. Well, you're funny. We talked about that in the last interview. So you're just bringing the humor out.
Exactly.
I mean, for me, I know humor helps during tough times.
Yes.
So it's good to have humor as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yes. What was the hardest part of the book to write, and what do you think made it so difficult?
Do you remember watching your favorite celebrity being interviewed, but you could tell there was more to that interview than what was being shown? My name is Adam Rothenberg, and in the past 16 years, I have interviewed over 2,200 artists and celebrities. And I am here to tell you that yes, there is definitely more to the interviews you have watched, read, or listened to. In my debut book, Behind the Curtain, The Mistakes, Lessons Learned, and Triumphs of Interviewing Celebrities, I take you behind the scenes of what really happens during an interview, sharing the joys, the pitfalls, and the OMG moments. You can get your copy on Amazon or through my entertainment platform, callmeadam.com. You can get your very own autographed copy.
I had to travel back in time, of course, and stay present in situations that were that I needed to not stay present. I know that sounds odd, but kind of emotionally stay in places so that I could describe in detail the things that I wanted to express. So that is, you know, we all think back at times, of course, but I had to think back and stay there for a while, which was really challenging in many regards. I'm an extremely visual person. So when I recounted and recollected certain experiences, I could see and feel and, you know, I relived it all. So that was challenging in its time, in its own way, going through a multitude of photographs and choosing which ones I wanted in the book was, very bittersweet, of course. And I think one of the reasons why it took a little bit of time was because I would do this for a certain amount of time, kind of compacted amount of time, let's say 2 or 3 months, I'd go through essays, I'd rewrite and look at blah, blah, blah. And then I'd have to step away for a while until I was ready to go back and revisit and reread. But I knew when it was ready. I just knew, okay, it's free to go now. So I really, really hope that people, you know, it's an interesting thing because I present myself and, you know, people might assume that from the external, everything is really cool and I do live a great life and everything in its own way, yes, is absolutely really cool and all of that, but it has been a ride, it has been an uphill journey, and I know that there are many experiences, a few of them I mentioned in this book. I'm not alone on this journey. I certainly have a lot of spiritual support, literally they're with me, and I feel it palpably oftentimes.
You do talk about some of them in the book, and it's interesting to read. And I always wonder, is it like a relief to get certain signs like that, or how does it affect you?
Yeah, it's definitely a relief. And yet it's at the same time, it's like, oh man, I really just, you know, boy, it'd be great if you could just be in the chair right now, you know, but that's all right. Because as, it's this great tune that the Police did. Totally aging myself like that. Can't remember the word.
We're there together.
Yeah. Spirits in the material world, right? We are spirits in the material world. So that's how I look at it. And this material world can be really difficult right now, man. So, you know, I'm okay with having both worlds merge. And I'm really, really, the more that I allow that to happen, the more palpable it becomes. So that's really, really exciting.
I think this book is really going to help people. So many people suffer loss and they need something to look for and to give comfort and to know that they're not alone. And putting it out there is going to help people, because it's been a lot of loss that you have suffered in you know, spread out. And other people are really, I just know they're going to relate to it.
Thank you.
Which chapter just flowed out of you? Which one was just like, oh yes, this is it?
The last chapter of the book. It literally, I was at an Italian restaurant. Oh my gosh. I don't know what, but really it was.
We're going to go out for Italian food one
day. We're going to have to do that. I'll take you to the place where I went. And it was about a year after Dennis passed, and I sat at the bar. I was dining, having a long lunch, leisurely long lunch, and was writing. I asked the bartender for a piece of paper and a pen. I had to get something down. I just, you know, it was all kind of building up, and I wrote that last essay in the book in about 20 minutes. And I tweaked it a little bit here and there, but basically, that's how it happened. Yeah. Yeah, it's incredible. Yeah.
What did you learn about yourself from writing this book?
That's a good question. What did I learn about myself? I learned that I'm more resilient than I thought I was. I'm pretty brave. Mm-hmm. And there's a huge capacity for love. And I learned that I believe that I'm willing to, you know, be open to love again.
Oh, that's wonderful. Because I know in the first few chapters you talk about your struggle to find love and the issues you have with love, and it's nice to hear now that you are coming back around to openness.
Yeah, exactly.
What do you miss most about your brothers?
Their smiles, for sure. Yeah. Their hand hugs. Yeah. And their eyes. Yeah.
How do you feel this book will help others? I mean, I feel like I know how it will help others from reading it, but as the person who wrote it, how do you think it will help?
I think it will help in this in the knowingness that, you know, that we're kind of all in this together. You know, that people, especially, you know, New York City, you walk around, you see people, and everyone has their own thing. Everyone has their own loss and grief that they're dealing with or not dealing with. But I really hope that this book offers the opportunity, kind of unlocks that if that holdingness, holding, you know, sometimes people, again, that word should, people don't think that they should grieve. Or again, that whole, you know, the society, we have this thing about, yeah, I'm over it. You know, yeah, I'm strong and I beat that. And, you know, I'm good, you know, it's okay to not be over it sometimes. All right, to just kind of walk through it, because, you know, we're not alone. And literally that kind of, again, that spirit and material world combination, leave yourself open to opportunity is there to be open to connecting in a different way to the one whom you've lost.
We're going to switch gears and we're going to move into your TV career. So first, I just want to touch upon ER because it's the show's 25th anniversary this year. I can't believe 25 years.
That is just not okay.
Yeah.
That much time went by.
But we look amazing.
I know.
25 years, you look the same as you did.
This is why I love you so much.
I love it.
No, thank you for saying that. It's the naturally curly hair. I think it does.
So what's one story about your time on ER that you have never shared before?
Oh, gosh, that I have never shared before. As many people know, and probably the whole world knows by now, George was a little bit of a prankster, right? Mm. So I remember we were filming in Chicago because the show, you know, it was based in Chicago. Mm. So we'd take a couple of trips each season. And it was in the middle of winter, and I think the film froze in the camera or something. So we were stuck in the hotel. Don't get me wrong. It was like the Ritz-Carlton in Chicago. It was not so bad, right? So we were stuck in the hotel for an extra few days or what have you. And I remember I was sleeping in early in the morning, and the door, there was a knock on the door at, I don't know, 6:45 or 7 a.m. or something. I opened the door, and it's all this food, this room service thing.
Oh.
It's like, dude, you know, he would do that, though. He'd fill out these breakfast cards and leave them on his colleagues' doors so that they'd be woken up with, like, you know, 18 scrambled eggs and a bottle of champagne or whatever. Oh, and you're just God. Like, wait a minute, what? So, yeah, there were moments like that, though. Definitely, you know, Jeannie's storyline, of course, was you know, pretty dramatic. Yes. And it was very pivotal and poignant and definitely ahead of its time. So moments of levity were very much appreciated.
Yes. And with all your acting experience since ER, what do you wish you knew then that you know now?
Oh, yeah. Don't take anything personally. That's kind of been the biggest lesson in my life. If there's one thing that I wish that I could go back and tell the younger me, don't take it personally, any of it. I don't have any control what anybody else says or thinks or does, anybody. Mm-hmm. Anybody, fellow actor, studio, you know, producer, doesn't matter. You know, for me, because I am such an sensitive person, an emotional person, one may not think that if they see me walking down New York City in my heels and my black sunglasses, but, you know, let's just remember.
After talking to you, I agree with that.
Yes. So I would have a tendency to, and the storyline in itself was extremely personal to me as well. And again, more to be revealed, will be revealed on that regard. But because the story was extremely personal for me, that left everything else open. I left myself open to unfortunate behavior that I took personally. Yeah. So, but you know, I'm here now. I've learned the lesson. By the grace of God and some kind of will that, you know, to persevere, I've done pretty well. From ER to Lincoln to Mr. Robot. Mm-hmm. Okay, Mr. Robot.
Yes, we are actually just about to talk about that, because you have had so much happening this year. You had the season 2 of Cloak and Dagger. This summer you had City on a Hill. And this fall this fall is the final season of Mr. Robot. So what are you looking forward to most about this final season?
Before we get to that answer, let's take a quick break and get a word in from one of our sponsors. We'll be back in a minute. Oh, wait. You don't know? You haven't heard? You must not be subscribed to the Call Me Adam Digest. When you sign up for the Call Me Adam Digest, you are the first to know. You get a front row seat to my interviews and podcast episodes where you get to discover new things about your favorite celebrities. You get personal stories from the other side of the microphone that you wouldn't know by just reading, watching, or listening to my interviews. We get to have a weekly connection, and you can add some fun to your weekend. So come take a peek behind the curtain with the Call Me Adam Digest. Sign up today at callmeadam.com. Can't wait to see you there. Welcome back to Burying It All with Call Me Adam. So as you were saying.
Wait, let me just recap everything that you just said. Okay, now wait a second. I got to think about this. We spoke a year ago.
Yes.
All right, so I finished the album. Second season of Mr. Robot. That's right. Or rather of Cloak and Dagger. So I was in New Orleans end of last year to finish that up. City on a Hill, filmed here in New York, right? Season 2 is coming up. finished my book, last season of Mr. Robot. Oh my God, no wonder I'm exhausted. I mean, what is going on? Yeah, all right, so this last season, okay, dude, I can't even tell you. I can't tell you what's going on. Of course, I can't tell you what's going on.
Right. No, I don't want you to get in trouble.
But all I can say is, what the, what? Just watch. I can't even, what I can tell you is that when we were all sitting around, you know, we had a cast read through of all of the episodes pre the beginning of filming this February. So I didn't see the material until on the day. And as I was turning the pages in certain episodes, I'm saying lines out loud, and in my head, I'm like, okay, what? So it was, yeah, I can't even make a sentence. I sound like a moron. All I can say is just, it's unforgettable. It's beyond anything I've ever done. It's shocking and heartbreaking and, everything. It's everything. And I think anyone who's watched the show who will totally understand what I'm saying.
What is one characteristic of Krista's you are glad you yourself do not possess?
You know, I've been thinking about that. I don't know. I really, there are characteristics that I wish I possessed.
Okay, what are some of those?
One in particular where she has an extraordinary sense of, you know, this ability to, this fearlessness. Again, I can't. All right. So, in the last season, Mr. Robot, sorry, spoilers for any who hasn't seen, shows up in Krista's office. Mm-hmm. So she has this fearlessness, this real conviction and faith in her ability as a healer in what she does, to, you know, to face this kind of thing head on. She's fearless that way. And a capacity to, you know, this desire and this need to help by any means necessary. With Elliot, anyway.
You're fearless too.
I'm like, wait a minute, maybe I am a little fearless, but yeah, and I wouldn't be fearless in that situation. Let's just put it that way. I'd be like running for the door. Yeah, no question about it. So, yeah, she's kind of amazing in that regard.
Yeah. I love it. Yeah. I love it. Well, we're almost at the end of the interview, so I have two questions left. One, we're just gonna do some rapid fire questions, some fun things. Favorite flavor M&M.
Oh, you know, I'm a Smarties girl because I'm from Canada originally. Yeah. So it's just chocolate and these candies are at. So favorite flavor. I just M&Ms. I eat peanut M&Ms.
Oh yeah.
So are there? Yeah, that's just.
Yeah. Peanuts. Okay. Sorry. Great.
Now they have like, I mean, there's like hazelnut.
There's peanut
butter. There's mint.
Yeah,
there's
I don't
caramel.
Like. I'm just like a purist in that way. Just, you know, peanut M&Ms with a hard shell candy. Yeah. I'm good to go. I don't like creamers in my coffee. I like a black coffee. If I want hazelnut, I'll have like a hazelnut cookie.
Yes, exactly. There's the air conditioner again. peanut butter, crunchy or smooth?
Oh, smooth. Yes. So that I can dip my chocolate into it.
Yes.
Love that.
Lucy's peanut butter cups, like big old scoop, dark chocolate, 100% pure dark chocolate, peanut butter. Yeah, man. Good to go.
I love it. Favorite go-to emoji when texting?
Oh, the, you know, the heart, the kiss with the heart?
Yes.
I love that one.
And favorite kind of donut?
Just pure glazed. Mm-hmm. Fresh out of the oven.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I love it.
Yeah.
We're at the last question.
Okay. I can't believe it.
So I always end my interviews with playing off of the title of my podcast, Burying It All with Call Me Adam. So if you were to bear it all and reveal something about yourself that you have not told in a previous interview, what would you tell us?
This is kind of it might be an OCD thing, mm-hmm. but as soon as I get out of bed, I here's my routine. This is what nobody knows. I get out of bed. I make coffee. While the coffee is brewing, I make my bed. Mm. I have to make my bed. It's like if I go on with my day and then I walk into my bedroom and my bed is unmade, it just kind of throws everything off. I don't know what that is. I live a very minimalist apartment. Like I live very minimally, very simply, very clean. And yeah, I have to get into a bed that's made. If I'm dating someone, or hopefully, God willing, when next I date someone, mm-hmm. if that ever happens, he's got to have a clean bed. If I walk into his apartment and his bed is unmade, you ain't getting any.
Oh, wow.
I hate to break it to you. We would not be compatible.
Most people, I know, most guys, I know. This is what I'm saying. Yeah. Maybe that's one of the reasons why I'm single.
I love it. That is great. That is great.
Maybe not so much, but.
Well, I think it's a fun fact. And now everybody knows if they want to date you, this is what they have
exactly.
to do.
Just make your bed before you invite me
exactly.
over. That's all.
Exactly.
Just, you know, like, because that's the thing, right? It's the unexpected. You know, friends come over. If it's not planned, and if I walk into somebody's house and it's an unplanned visit, mm-hmm. then I really get to see how they live.
Yes.
I mean, anybody can tidy up before inviting someone over, but I like that walking in unexpectedly
mm-hmm.
because then it's like, oh, I see that you like to, you know, throw your underwear over the back of your sofa and you're okay with that
right.
for the whole day.
Yes.
Okay. I don't think so, dude. Not going to be picking that up after you.
No. That's so great.
Yeah.
That's so great.
Well, that's the whole interview. I can't believe it. Everybody listening, you're going to come to Gloria's show October 25th at Feinstein's 54 Below, 9:30 p.m. You're going to watch the final season of Mr. Robot and your book is coming out November 19th, My Brother's Keeper. So you can get that at book retailers online. And then your new album comes out in 2020. Everybody's going to, when it comes out, you're going to buy it. If you come to the show, remember at Feinstein's 54 Below, you can get an advanced copy.
Exactly. Yes. I'll find it for you.
Oh, that's so great.
Yeah.
Well, everyone get your tickets. I'll have all the information up at callmeadam.com. Thank you so much, Gloria. This was wonderful.
It was wonderful. Thank you for having
welcome.
Me. It was great.
He'll get the dirt and the scoop and the story, for he happens to be in the know. Just ask anybody who's had a Adam lives for the business of show. CallMeAdam.com.
Thanks for listening. For more Call Me Adam interviews, visit CallMeAdam.com and follow me on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at CallMeAdamNYC.